well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with the Second Amendment Foundation's Alan Gottlieb here in just a moment or two about the arrest of one of Cory Booker's pals and staffers for illegally carrying a firearm inside the U.S. Capitol. Yeah, while Cory Booker was delivering his record-setting filibuster on Monday and Tuesday, I guess it was Monday night, that this staffer was arrested. Now, interestingly enough, the Capitol Police report that the staffer was originally escorted around security by a member of Congress. And then apparently later in the evening, the staffer came back and alerted the Capitol Police that he had a gun on him. Which, you know, I guess give him some credit for being honest, I guess. But there are all kinds of questions that Senator Booker should answer here about the arrest of this individual, Kevin Betts, who, according to Booker's office, is a driver for the senator. But Booker himself has described him as a friend. Back in 2016, for example, he said, Kevin Betts has been a friend and team member since 2006 when I became mayor and even before. Said, I so deeply appreciate his steadfast friendship, incredible dedication to Newark, and now his service to the state. And he has, you know, gone on to praise Betts over the years. So this isn't just some rando who Cory Booker doesn't know. And in fact, it sure sounds like Senator Booker was the one who escorted Betts around security, which begs the question, did Cory Booker know that his buddy had a gun on him on the Capitol grounds where he was not allowed to have one? And then, of course, the question becomes, why should we listen to a damn thing Cory Booker has to say about your right to defend yourself, my right to defend myself, our right to carry in these quote-unquote gun-free zones, these sensitive places, if he is helping his friend break the law? So, again, we'll talk about that with Alan Gottlieb. Let's get the conversation started here. Take a look and a listen. Alan, thanks very much for coming on the program, and it's good to talk with you today, sir.
Hey, Cam, it's always great to be with you and your listeners.
And what a crazy story we have to talk about here. So what we know is that on Monday night, this longtime staffer and longtime friend of Cory Booker, according to Booker's own words, was arrested for illegally carrying a firearm inside the U.S. Capitol. According to a statement by the U.S. Capitol Police, a member of Congress escorted this individual, bypassed security. So he didn't have to go through the metal detectors, didn't have to get patted down. And then at some point, the guy comes back and informs officers, hey, I have a gun on me, at which point he is arrested. Now, in the middle of this, Cory Booker is giving his, 25-hour-long filibuster. And I'll be honest with you, Alan, I didn't listen to 25 hours of Cory Booker talking. That's like hell to me. But I don't think he brought up his buddy's arrest at all during those 25 hours.
No, he didn't. And Cam, what's interesting is afterwards, now that it's become public, none of the anti-gun groups, the gun prohibition lobby, nobody has come out to criticize this. No one is attacking Cory Booker or his staff member for having the illegal gun on Capitol in the Capitol. I find it amazing. You know, for all of them, the hypocrisy is absolutely amazing. You've got Senator Booker, who has never met a gun control bill he hasn't wanted to go to bed with.
Right.
You know, and so it's sort of like guns for me, but not for thee. And this particular staffer and friend is sort of on a security detail and follows Cory around whenever he's in New Jersey, wherever he goes. So Cory had to know that this person carries a firearm.
He's a former law enforcement officer in the Newark Police Department. I'm with you. I would think that Senator Booker would be well aware. And again, according to the Capitol Police, you know, there was this effort to bypass security, which suggests to me that, yes, that member of Congress who was unidentified in the Capitol Police statement knew that this guy had a gun on him, knew that didn't want that gun to be discovered. And so they walked around the security rather than going through it, as you or I would have to do if we're visiting the Capitol.
Yeah, again, it's, you know, guns for me, but not for thee. And, you know, while Cory Booker obviously is a hypocrite with this, it's quite frankly, the Democratic Party as a whole are pretty much hypocrites on this issue. Because let's be honest about it, this isn't the first time something like this has happened. You know, we're reminded back in 1986 when anti-gun rights Senator Ted Kennedy's bodyguard was arrested in the Russell Senate office building having an Uzi and a Beretta in his gear. You know, and so this isn't the first time. Then you can go further. You remember Dianne Feinstein, who supported handgun bans and banning all kinds of semi-automatic firearms, you know, owned a handgun, but it's okay for her, but not for us. Or you can look at Bill Clinton, you know, who supported all kinds of gun bans, but quote unquote would take a photo ops duck hunting to try and win gun owners' votes. Or even Kamala Harris, you know, who supported every kind of gun control ban, you know, in existence. You know, lo and behold, she's running for president to try and win gun owners' votes. You know, I own a handgun. I mean, the hypocrisy is rank.
It is. And not just among the politicians. As you know, the gun control lobby, strangely silent on this, right? I mean, if this had been, let's say, Lauren Boebert or Marjorie Taylor Greene or Andrew Clyde or Rand Paul or any Republican, right, whose staffer had been busted for carrying a firearm illegally, they would be issuing press release after press release. I'm sure you'd see Chris Brady or Chris Brown from the Brady campaign popping up on The View or MSNBC, bemoaning the gun crazies on Capitol Hill. But when it is a champion of their cause, of the, you know, the prohibitionist movement, yeah, they're keeping their mouth shut.
Yeah, the silence is deafening. You know, it's absolutely amazing. But the American public sees through all this. I mean, be honest about it. And they realize the hypocrisy that's there. And that's why, quite frankly, the Democrats are having a very hard time in elections in battleground states.
You know, I think you're right. Because, I mean, you know, look, we don't have to talk about the policies for carrying in the Capitol building itself. To me, the big takeaway here is Cory Booker may not carry a gun for personal protection, but he surrounds himself with people who do. Right. He knows that gun-free zones don't work in his heart. We know that gun-free zones don't work. And yet you've got a guy who has spent so much political capital and so much of his career making it difficult, if not impossible, for the average American to have that same level of protection that Cory Booker has. Right. And that's right. The real issue here.
Yeah. And let's add to that. You know, if you and I were busted in the state, in the Capitol with a firearm, we'd probably have a long prison term. It's going to be very interesting to see what kind of sentence this person gets, or if he's even prosecuted.
Well, I'm guessing under the Trump administration, I'm guessing the U.S. I guess this would be the U.S. Attorney for Washington, D.C., who has said that he is going to make prosecuting gun crimes a priority. So, I'm curious to see, too. But, you know, if this was the Biden administration, I think Booker's buddy would get a pass. I'm not so sure that's going to be the case this time around.
Well, we'll see. OK, I have a feeling Democrats, there's two scales of justice here. one for anti-gun liberal Democrats and the other one for the rest of us.
You know what? You may very well be right, but I'm an eternal optimist, so I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that we get equal justice applied here. Alan, as always, I appreciate you joining us on the program. It's great talking with you. Tell folks again how they can find out more about the Second Amendment Foundation, how they can become a member to help support the dozens of lawsuits that are underway, including, by the way, one just filed this week, right?
Yeah, in Colorado over there, excise tax on guns, trying to tax guns out of existence, sort of like a poll tax. At any rate, the best way to reach us is at our website at saf.org, or just Google Second Amendment Foundation or any browser, and we'll pop right up, and you can see all our legal cases and all the activities we've got going, and we obviously support all the help we can get from the general public.
Absolutely. Alan, thanks again for your time today, sir. Look forward to doing this again soon.
Thank you, Cam.
My thanks to Alan for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again here soon. Speaking of Second Amendment organizations, by the way, not only do we have the Second Amendment Foundation, you've got the Firearms Policy Coalition, but the NRA also joining in that lawsuit, taking on Colorado's new Second Amendment syntax. You know, the NRA annual meeting is coming up here. gosh, in a little more than 3 weeks in Atlanta, Georgia. And I am happy to report that I will be on the ground in Atlanta. In fact, you can stop by and see us. We're going to be going from booth 665. We'll be doing all kinds of interviews there. I will be around, I would say, most of the day on Friday, probably some of the day on Saturday. Tom Knighton is going to be on hand as well. So there should be somebody at the booth. If you stop by and we're not there, just wait a little bit and we'll probably be back. But we'd love to see you in Atlanta at the NRA annual meeting coming up later this month. All right, now let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start with a case out of North Carolina. The headline from the Charlotte Observer: out on bond despite 37 felony charges since 2023. Did the North Carolina court system fail? It certainly would appear that way. And in fact, that is what law enforcement officials are saying about Chiron Evans. The News and Observer says that Durham County Sheriff Clarence Burkhead says Evans should not have been returning to the jail again and again on escalating charges, the latest being the murder of a Durham, North Carolina man who is on his way to a dialysis appointment. Burkhead said the tragic accident that Mr. Evans is charged with that allegedly caused the death of another person could have been avoided. According to police, Evans was behind the wheel of a stolen car. He drove away from police and slammed into a vehicle in which 53-year-old Jermaine Clement was a passenger. Durham police have charged Chiron Evans with second-degree murder. By the way, Evans is 20 years old. 20 years old. 37 felony charges in the past 2 years. He's 20. And he is still out on the street. Now he's been charged with second-degree murder and three other felonies. As the News and Observer reports, he had already collected at least 37 felony and 9 misdemeanor charges since July of 2023 in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Durham. So basically the Research Triangle area. In less than 2 years, 37 felonies and 9 misdemeanors. But what's even more amazing is just 4 days before this accident on March 19th, back on March 15th, he walked out of the Durham County Jail. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I take that back. He was arrested on March 15th. He walked out on March 18th after covering just a $10,000 bond for violating pretrial release conditions for a previous arrest. The News and Observer quoted Larry Smith, spokesperson for the Durham Fraternal Order of Police. He said, law enforcement officers have clearly done what they're supposed to do in arresting this person over and over. And it just appears that there is a breakdown somewhere on the judicial court side of it that is just continuing to allow them to get out. And now somebody's dead. They also spoke, the paper did, with Durham County Chief District Judge Clayton Jones, who questioned, quote, why had it taken the court system so long to close Evans's cases that date back to July of 2023? He said, these cases pending this long compromised the community and unfortunately put us in the position where we have a loss of life. Yeah. According to the court rules in Durham County, low-level felonies are supposed to be adjudicated within 1 year. You know, again, we have a constitutional right to a speedy trial. And excessive delays can lead to charges being dismissed outright. Now, that's fairly unusual. But in this case, again, so many different charges unresolved. And, you know, I think you can probably make a case that this individual should have been held without bond until these trials began, given the sheer number of charges that he was facing. Time and time and time again. But for whatever reason, Chiron Evans was allowed to repeatedly be released on bail, on bond, even when he violated the terms of his release. He was not returned to jail and kept there until his trial began. He was allowed to walk free once again. Since July of 2023, again, he's been caught at least 5 times with stolen vehicles, once with a stolen gun. In the 3 months before the crash, police charged Evans with 18 different low-level felonies, including breaking into cars, running from police, and strangling a woman, which I wouldn't consider to be a low-level felony, but I guess under North Carolina law it is. From 2023 to March of this year, he broke into and stole cars in Durham, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. In earlier this year, I guess, police had linked him to what they described as a, quote, significant increase in vehicle break-ins. His first criminal charge appears to have been on July 6, 2023, when the Durham County Sheriff's Office alleged that he possessed stolen goods. They arrested him on September 8th of that year. He was released on a $2,500 secured bond, same day of his arrest. And then again, arrested on 8 more felonies, including breaking and entering into 2 homes on October 7th. So less than a month after he was released. He got a $10,000 bond that time around. He spent about 2 days in jail. Then in 2024, he picked up 17 more felonies, 4 misdemeanors, and 3 separate cases in Durham County, 1 case in Carrboro, North Carolina. But he wasn't arrested on those charges until December 11th of last year, when police say they caught him in possession of a stolen car and a stolen handgun. At that point, he was released on $30,000 bond. And since January, he's been charged with at least 11 other felonies. Before this crash on March 19th, on February 4th, he was arrested, charged with harming a woman he was dating, allegedly punching and strangling her, and then trying to stop her from calling 911 by taking her phone away. Spent 8 days in jail there and was released on a $15,000 bond. The woman was in court, said that she wanted to drop the charges, according to the judge in that case. So as disturbing as the allegations are, the judge may have felt like his hands were tied in that case. But again, an escalating series of alleged crimes, none of which, again, he has been adjudicated on because these cases haven't gone to trial. But you still have to wonder, why on earth was this guy released on such low bond, even after he had violated the terms of his earlier bond conditions? It's just unbelievable to me. All right, moving on to today's armed citizen story from Louisiana, where a Slidell man shot by a homeowner after he tried to break into a home. That, according to the St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office. Don't have a ton of details here. 52-year-old Tyrone Mercadell allegedly kicked in the door of a home on Monday evening and assaulted the female homeowner inside. The sheriff's office says after a fight between Mercadell and the homeowners, who apparently knew Mercadell, the woman grabbed a hold of a gun, fired 2 rounds in self-defense, hitting Mercadell in the leg. The male homeowner, identified as Wayne Mercadell, so apparently some relationship to the suspect, then fired at Tyrone Mercadell's tires to stop him from fleeing law enforcement. Which, by the way, I understand the impulse. In a lot of circumstances, that's going to get you into trouble. An errant round doesn't hit that tire. First of all, you could argue that you're not firing in self-defense if you're trying to stop somebody from leaving. Because if you're trying to stop somebody from leaving, they are not presenting an active threat to you. In this case, I don't know that the homeowner is going to be charged, but I cannot recommend trying to shoot out the tires to stop somebody from leaving the scene of a crime, because that can end up with you getting charged as well. Tyrone Mercadell, after he gets out of the hospital, is going to be booked on 1 count of aggravated burglary, according to the sheriff's office. And yes, indeed, Wayne Mercadell, according to the New Orleans Times-Picayune, was booked into jail on Monday night into the St. Tammany Parish Correctional Center for aggravated criminal damage to property. So, again, even if you think, hey, if this guy gets away, police aren't going to be able to catch him, if you are firing a shot and your life is not in danger, you do not have a reasonable belief of great bodily harm or death, you are risking criminal charges yourself. And it appears that's exactly what happened to one of the 2 homeowners there, along with the suspect who is alleged to have broken in. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, when able to do the right thing, a group of fishermen in Florida who helped save a man who suffered a medical emergency on a river. We don't know what type of medical emergency it was, but it happened on the Rainbow River in Marion County. There was a group of anglers out there, including a professional angler named Chandler Dowling. And he discovered apparently the man in distress near a boat. So he called out to some folks who were nearby, including, I guess, some scuba divers, Gene C., Jermaine Boya, Ivan Coward. They began performing CPR on the man. Dowling then got the man to dry land, where Marion County deputies arrived. They continued CPR until EMS took over. According to Fox 35 in Orlando, the man did survive the incident, which happened a couple of weeks ago. He is now reported to be out of the hospital, back home. And the law enforcement in Marion County praising the actions of these Good Samaritans. Deputy Robert Bosniak said, without them there, the immediacy in which they acted, I don't believe that gentleman would have survived. Fox 35 in Orlando spoke with Chandler Dowling, told him, hey, you know what? Guy's back home. And he said, it makes me tear up to know that. He said, I'm happy for him. I'm happy that everything worked out. Again, don't have a lot of the details, but the most important detail we do know, that because of the quick thinking and the fast actions of these Good Samaritans, a man is alive today, and that probably would not have been the case were it not from these individuals intervening. So there you go. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here tomorrow as we wrap up the broadcast week anyway. But don't forget, we're keeping you up to date. I don't know where the filling out came in. Keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation each and every day at BearingArms.com. So be sure to check out the website. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. You'll get all kinds of great benefits at every level of support. But no matter which level you choose, you will be supporting the independent pro-Second journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And we greatly appreciate that. Because in this day and age of big tech censorship and anti-gun media bias, it is more important than ever that we've got voices out there who are bringing the truth to the debate over our right to keep and bear arms. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.